Working in real estate and wholesaling in particular is not just about getting stuff under contract. It's about getting deals done. And that's why mistake six is like a perfect example of that. You can make an offer with numbers that don't work that well, but you're hopeful and get it under contract and have nothing to do with it. And let the seller down, let yourself down. So it's more about getting deals done than it is just about getting under contract.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm Nicole Kamanjian. I'm here with Cody Richard and the host of this show, Jeff Rappaport. This is episode 252, and today is part two of 12 common mistakes investors make structuring creative financing offers. If you're looking for a mentor, check out roimentors.com. Jeff has two mentorships, the Apprenticeship Program and the Creative Financing Academy. You can learn more about these mentorships at roimentors.com. While listening to this episode, if you guys have questions, please head over to the Creative Financing Podcast Facebook group. If you're not part of the community, just search the Creative Financing Podcast in Facebook and ask to join. If you're looking for a free creative financing class, Jeff hosts a virtual one on Zoom the second Thursday of every month, so bring your questions. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can ask your questions in the comments below. Lastly, we want to thank you for subscribing, liking, and sharing this podcast with your friends.
All right. So let's start with part two of 12 mistakes investors make using creative or owner financing. So you guys can see this now, right?
Yep.
So not paying enough attention to the balloon payment. I think that's where we actually left off on our last episode. We did mention this, but I see this happen a lot. And this one is, you have to start looking into, you know, the details of a particular offer before you start to see this. But between students and wholesalers that I see send stuff out, I see this happen pretty frequently. And that is that, you know, they structure their offers based on what they think works now. And they're just not really thinking about then, you know, later. And this becomes especially important on shorter term kind of finance offers, you know, 2, 3, 5 year kind of terms, where, hey, you might not have enough equity pay down, principal pay down, to make it easy to refinance the property. You might have, I mean, the goal really is to get in light. So if we're getting in light and we're putting down, let's say, less than 10%, we want to make sure we're a minimum at 80% loan to value at the balloon, preferably more like at 75% loan to value. And one of the things we've really got to be cognizant of right now, which I don't have a crystal ball. Cody, you have a crystal ball?
No, I just
don't know what's going to happen. Okay. Nicole, you know what's going to happen in the future, right?
I wish.
So, you know, interest rates right now are, you know, somewhere between, you know, right around probably 6 3/4. And that's A plus credit, owner occupant kind of thing. If you're buying non-owner, you're in the sevens for sure. And I don't think we're done. I think it's going to continue to rise. It kind of goes up, comes down a little, goes up, comes down. But where are we going to be in 3 years, 5 years? Could it be possible that you could be looking at interest rates in the sixes still? Yeah, I think it's very possible. Could you not? Could we be looking at sevens? Could we even potentially be in the eights or nines? Well, obviously, we can't account for everything, but what I want to do is account for at least the direction that the market's going in, right? And the way I look at it is, hey, we'll probably see rising interest rates for, let's say, the next year-ish, and at some point, we'll reach a tipping point, and then they'll start to come down. We don't know how fast, but I want to try to put myself or my potential buyers in a position where, hey, whenever that balloon payment is due, and it might be shorter term, might be a little longer term, that they're in a good position to finish this deal, right? Where they can refinance, at the very worst, be able to sell the property and get someone else to bring cash to the table. But I want to try to look at where will people be at the end of the balloon. So if you were paying only interest only payments, where would you end up? How much money are you putting down? We can't bank on appreciation right now. To be honest, I'd try not to ever bank on appreciation. If I'm close, I'm like, all right, appreciation will probably make up the difference. But we're in a declining market. I'm not estimating that. In 7 years, I would say properties will probably still have appreciated. But do I want to really estimate on how much? Not really. So I want to make sure that, hey, based on where we're at today, will we have enough value? What if prices came down for a few years and we had to refinance and we're at 85% loan to value? We're going to have to bring a significant check to the closing table, and those interest rates are going to hurt our cash flow for sure. So keep track of where these balloon payments are going to end up. You'll thank me later, and probably in 3 to 7 years is my guess. So,
and where would you suggest people be? I know 80 is a safe place, but would you suggest trying to be even lower, like 70, yes, 75% loan to value, just in case it goes down? Or what's your thought?
Depends on the asset a little bit. But let's say that my goal would be to sell to an owner-occupant. So I'd feel pretty okay at a 75% loan to value based on today's value. That's without any appreciation. That's even if the market went down for, let's say, a year, year and a half, it gives enough time to start to bounce back and get back to at least the same value that we're at now. So if I was at 75, I'd feel pretty comfortable. If I'm dealing with more, an asset-based income type property, in some cases, I might be okay with 80. The bigger assets, for sure, I'd want to be at 75 or less. And really, it's just the confidence to be where the buyer or yourself is confident that, hey, when the balloon comes due, that there will be ways that I can do this and still make this work, right? Mm-hmm. So. Interest rates, and I've started to do something on some of my deals, which are, I put clauses in that, hey, if someone wants a 5-year term and I just don't feel comfortable in a 5-year term, I'll tell them, I'll give you the 5-year term, but the term will automatically extend if we haven't reached at least 75% loan to value or less. Mm-hmm. Or if interest rates are 7% or more, the term automatically extends for, indefinitely, for up to 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, or until we meet those standards. And I'm just trying to protect everyone in the deal.
Yeah, that's a helpful addendum.
All right. Any other questions, Nicole?
No.
Mm-mm.
Okay. If you notice, you guys brought a lot of these up already, and or they're connected with other parts that we've already talked about. So agreeing to a short term, I think this is what you brought up, right, Nicole? Too short of a term. And, this is what we talked about right away, was that, yeah, there are some short-term finance offers that work. If we're wholesaling to a rehabber, or if we were doing something to a landlord that wanted to create some value. BRRRR strategy is tough right now because of the higher interest rates. Not impossible, but tougher. But if we were selling to an owner-occupant, we'd have a significant problem with a shorter term. If we're selling to someone that's going to, a turnkey kind of deal, the longer term, the better. If the terms are better than what you can get right now, if we're offering something at 4%, There's no investor out there that can go to the bank and get 4% right now. So understanding, again, and this is tied, I really feel, to your potential exit strategies, understanding who your potential buyers are going to be and what your plan is with the property, and what their plan or what you think they would be doing with the property, right? So we either have to know where we want to go with this or potentially where our buyers want to go with this.
Yeah, and I think this one's super straightforward. Like you said, you just got to know your exit strategy and what would work for that.
Well, and if you're not sure, err on the longer side. Right. At least if that, let's say that Cody, if I was trying to buy your house and, you know, my goal is I'm going to cash you out in 12 to 18 months, but I get you to go 6 years. Hey, if you have equity and well, we agree to 6 years and I come to you and I said, look, Cody, I could cash you out. You know, I got some money coming in and I could get you paid off here in the next few weeks. Would you be willing to take this much rather than what I owe you in terms of this much right now? And more likely than not, you would be willing to take a discount to get paid off now rather than wait another 3, 4, 5 years, right?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
So I would tell you, if you're going to make an error on long-term, not short-term.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, do you know what Dodd-Frank rules they would potentially be violating?
So Dodd-Frank pretty much applies to selling to owner-occupants, people that are going to live in the property. And so mm-hmm. Dodd-Frank is not a proponent of balloon payments to begin with. Mm-hmm. The shorter the balloon, they're going to like even less. They are trying to protect owner occupants from predatory lending, and they're trying to protect these people from putting themselves in a position where they can fail. So some of the Dodd-Frank rules are about underwriting. So determining, okay, you want to buy this property, great. Can you afford to buy this property? You know, and they'll run people through a bank application just like you would get at a mortgage broker's office, but it's not really based on credit now. You don't have to have a 720 plus credit score, but you've got to be able to show income and then, you know, justify all your expenses and you know, what's left over each month, and well, where does that put you in terms of being able to afford this type of property? So there are some rules, but balloon payments and shorter balloon payments only lend to violating those rules. So we're not going to get into it because it's sort of complicated, and I'm not an attorney and I don't want to give legal advice, but yeah, you want to be super careful about it.
Makes sense.
I think we did an episode on it a while back.
Well, we had Russ Donahue, I believe, come in and talk. You know, he was an RMLO and talked about some Dodd-Frank stuff. And we'll probably do that again, you know, some point in 2023. I was just talking to, there's an attorney and there's a servicer / transaction coordinator, I think, that would be helpful to have on. So we'll talk more about that.
Yep. Episode 132 for reference.
Yeah, thank you much. Yep. It's been a while, I guess. All right. So mistake number 6. Wow. You know, they just keep kind of running into each other, right? Not understanding the potential exit strategies. Just talking about it. And so whenever I look at a deal, I'm always trying to figure out, what can I do with this? Who, you know, do I want to own it? Does, you know, would I have buyers that want to own it? If buyers want to own it, what do they want to do with it? Do they, is it a value add where they'll go do some work or increase occupancy and increase the value and then refinance? Is it a rehab? Is it a wholetail? Is it a whatever? And I'm trying to identify all the particular potential exit strategies that could exist on this property. And, you know, that we talked about this already, but it's super important to know what, you know, if we're going to offer the seller a down payment, doesn't it make sense that we should have some idea of our expectation of what we could get back from our potential buyer? I mean, if I'm offering you 20% down, Cody and Nicole, you're only giving me 10% down. That's not a regular business model I want to continue doing. Eventually, I'm going to be out of money. So we need to understand this to at least some degree. And understanding these exit strategies might be the difference of staying in the middle of a deal where you can get passive income and, you know, a lot of equity buildup over time, as opposed to just wholesaling the deal and making an assignment fee, which might be just fine. But if you don't look at it both ways, you may not structure it the right way to the seller. So understanding what it is that either you or your buyers are going to try to do exit strategy wise can really make a difference on, you know, what you end up being able to do with the property. So I know that there, it sounds like there's a lot of moving parts, and in some ways there are, but when you get in the habit of doing this, it's super easy. There'll be another mistake that we'll talk about either in the next episode or the one after, where when you're creating multiple offers, how do you structure them? You know, how do you make them different from one another? And, you know, one of the ways could be is, hey, they choose this, then this becomes the exit strategy. Or if they choose that, this becomes the exit strategy. And maybe they're not all the best exit strategies, but they all make you money. So any questions?
No, just one comment. Working in real estate and wholesaling in particular is not just about getting stuff under contract. It's about getting deals done. And that's why mistake six is like a perfect example of that. You can make an offer with numbers that don't work that well, but you're hopeful and get it under contract and have nothing to do with it. Yep. And let the seller down, let yourself down. So it's more about getting deals done than it is just about getting under contract.
Yep. Very good point. Nicole, any thoughts?
No, it's just, I guess it also depends these exit strategies on your business model. Cause not everyone, like for instance, you don't do short-term rental, like you don't right. account for that. So,
but to me, the short-term rental still works. Yeah. You know, if it works as a rental, then it, then I'm going to let the short-term rental people decide if it would make good sense for a short-term rental deal, right? So I don't really have to go and, I guess I could. I could structure these and then, you know, when I send them out, I could focus on short-term rental buyers. But, you know, to me, if it doesn't work as a long-term rental, it shouldn't be used as a short-term rental. That's my own personal view, and that way you stay out of trouble. But I probably could sell some extra properties if I did that.
I just gave you an idea, Jeff.
Thanks, Nicole. anything else? Anything else that you guys want to add?
No, it's just super helpful.
Great. Well, I thank you. Hopefully you guys can put this to work in your own business and go out and create some terms.